Technician pay reality check. Are they really underpaid or missing the bigger picture? Join passionate automotive trainer and coach Andrew Uglow as he tackles the most common technician complaint, I don't get paid enough. In this episode, you'll learn why comparing technician wages to other trades misses crucial context, how lifestyle choices impact financial perception, and discover practical strategies for addressing compensation concerns beyond just raising pay. Along the way, Andrew shares some great stories, including how a simple overtime test reveals whether it's really about the money and why teaching financial management might be more valuable than salary increases. I'm your co-host, Anthony Pearl, and this is the Frictionless Workshop Podcast. Let's get cranking. Andrew, welcome to another series of the podcast. And we've got a really interesting topic we're going to go through in this series in particular. But firstly, welcome.
Thanks, Anthony. It's good to be recording another podcast again. It's a funny dynamic, isn't it? You think you've said everything, or maybe people think they've heard everything that you have to say, whichever way you look at it, and things emerge, things change, you come across new information, and it's like, well, actually, this would be really useful for people.
It's always interesting because there's always more, and I think exactly what you just said, suddenly there is this different perspective, or there's something that you've covered, and we get the feedback as we've had to explore things in a different way, in a different light. So I think in this series, we're going to really take the technician's perspective, aren't we? We're going to really have a look in a lot more detail and things that might be impacting them.
Sure. So when customers come into a business, so if I'm a service manager, a workshop owner, customers come into my business, they come into, essentially what they do is they come into within my business, invest in the reliability of their car. That's why they're there. And they do that by purchasing parts from me as the workshop or the workshop manager and purchasing skill from the people that I employ. And so when something isn't right with the customer's car, we end up with a customer complaint. And so it usually forms into one of two types of complaints. My car is doing something that it shouldn't, or conversely, it isn't doing something that I was expecting it to. And so we collect the data from the customer and we go through a diagnostic process. And perhaps one of the more common diagnostic processes is the six-step troubleshooting process. If you're not familiar with that, Google that stuff. It's a pretty good process. And we then go through and unpack and discover what's actually going on with the vehicle. Because very often what the customer's complaint is a symptom as opposed to the cause of a problem. And so what I wanted to do for this series is I wanted to go and take that same frame and go, well, have we ever actually sat down and done some diagnosis, some six-step troubleshooting, if you like, on the technician's claims and complaints that they give us by way of feedback? And if you're a workshop service manager or workshop owner, you'd be familiar with the complaints that technicians do. And so I've collected a bunch of the most common complaints that pop up in training. So working with technicians quite regularly, which I thoroughly enjoy. And this is the sort of stuff that just comes up in either, you know, the casual conversations, or like we'll be talking about, you know, technology on car, and this will emerge out of the discussion.
I think it's a fascinating point as well to kick this off, is that you as someone independent coming in get to hear things that maybe the owners and the managers get to hear, but only in a different way, whereas the willingness to share in this way is quite informal in many respects and allows it to be free-flowing. And I think it allows you to then take a perspective and really address it. And I think that's what we're going to do in this series. So I think it's done with a lot of great insight.
Yeah. And the technicians, because I don't employ them, they don't work for me. I don't have a stake in their financial performance. Like I definitely, as a trainer, as a coach, I definitely have a stake in seeing them be successful without question. And at the same time, they can tell me anything and there's no repercussions. You know, there's no, well, you know, you're fired or you can't say that, or you know, we have to work within the bounds of good HR policy for sure. But the genuineness with which this is expressed is really, really quite powerful.
So without a further ado, we'll get into the first of the complaints, which is probably the one that I guess is the most obvious in many respects. Whether how true it is, let's explore some of this. They don't get paid enough.
And I'm sure as a service manager or a workshop owner, you've had this technician comes to you and go, I want you to pay me more. And I certainly know my experience as a technician, you know, I look at the metrics that I'm measured by. I look at my productivity, my efficiency, my profitability, if that's how I'm being tracked. And I go, actually, I'm doing really well. I'm worth more money. And so I approach the business and I go, well, I'm not getting paid enough. And that's a fairly heavy conversation, isn't it? And so I want to just put on my diagnostic hat as a trainer, as a technician coach, and go, well, okay, let's put on a thinking cap and go, well, are you not getting paid enough? Is that actually a thing? Or is there something more to this? Just like I would with a customer's concern. Customer says, my car's air conditioning isn't cold. Well, I go, well, okay, well, let's go and test to see whether the air conditioning's cold or not. It might be, and it might be something with the customer. The customer's not using it correctly, or they've got it set to, I don't know, something, and it's how it's applied versus what's actually happening. And so let's go and test this. I don't get paid enough. You know, they don't pay me enough. I should be paid more money. These types of complaints. And the first question I want to ask is, well, what are you comparing that to? Because if you're comparing yourself to the CEO of Telstra, or, you know, Anthony Albanese as the Prime Minister, well, sure, they get paid a whole lot more money. And how do you justify that comparison? Well, that's an interesting discussion. But like, what are you actually comparing it to? And so when we go and test this, and the first question that we look for when we're doing any diagnosis is this valid? Is it actually what the customer's complaining about? And is that a fault? You know, so we go back to the idea, well, I'm not getting paid enough. Well, is that actually correct? Is it actually how you say it is? And is that a problem? And I'm going to go, well, it may or may not be how we say it is, but it's certainly a problem because now I'm getting feedback, right? Now I'm getting response from my technicians. And if I don't address the concern, it's the same as me not addressing a customer's concern. I'm going to lose the customer, right? So here, I'm going to lose my tech. And the technicians are the heart and soul of a workshop. If you don't have good, productive technicians, how can you possibly be profitable? How can you satisfy customers? How can you do any of these outcomes that the business is built to do? So compared to what? And often, I don't know, we get the first comparison is with other trades. You know, well, compared to electricians, compared to plumbers, compared to, that's the first one. I'm going to argue that's a reasonably fair comparison. Like, I'm a trade, they're a trade. You know, they're making more money than me. It's not fair. You should pay me more money at a surface level. Sorry, that's fair. The next one is by way of a comparison is, well, look at all the stuff I have to know. You know, what's changed for plumbers in the last 50 years? We've gone from clay pipes to PVC pipes, which is like way easier and much less hard and quicker. And so they're even more efficient than they were. The adage goes, well, excrement still runs downhill. That hasn't changed. So like, why are plumbers making all this money? There's been a change in technology and how they do stuff, sure. You know, laser levels and all this sort of stuff. So I've got to know physics and chemistry and, like, you pick a topic. I have to know it. Fluid dynamics, the list goes on. And why shouldn't I get paid more for knowing that? Of course, the other thing that usually doesn't come up for technicians is supply and demand.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, is there a lot of them? Is there enough to actually justify, well, there's so few, we have to pay some of them more? Is it geographic as well? You know, there's lots of things that come into that equation.
Yeah. One of the, like, the automotive industry, like, I started in the automotive industry a fair time ago. I'm an automotive industry lifer. You could argue that I'm an automotive industry tragic. I've been in the industry longer than I care to admit, in excess of 30 years. And when I started, there was a skill shortage then. There was a lack of technicians then. There was a lack of apprentices then. We couldn't find good people then. And that's been the same problem. And if anything, it's intensified since. And so you go back to supply and demand. Well, okay, that's an issue. There's not enough supply. So the price should go up. Otherwise, they move elsewhere. But I still think we're dealing at a surface level and we haven't really got to the core of what's going on. Certainly, it's been my perspective that technicians are human like the rest of us. And the grass is always greener, isn't it, Anthony? We look on the other side of the fence and we go, poor, look at those people, you know. '80s tragic, I point to Mark Knopfler and Money for Nothing and the song, you know. Look at all these people, look at all the stuff that these rock stars get, you know. Like, that'd be the life, wouldn't it? And I think what we forget to consider, certainly is the technicians maybe don't give this sufficient thought, is that often the reason why the grass is greener is because there's more BS on that side of the fence. BS makes the grass green. There's more stuff to deal with and cope with. Not that technicians don't have a lot to deal with, not that we don't, as service management or workshop ownership, have a lot to wade through. But I'm concerned about the validity of the test. Now, there are some techs that are definitely underpaid, and I like the idea of paying people more, like taking money off the table, taking it out of the equation, so that now we don't want the technicians just to work for our money. That would be a really enormous mistake and a really huge opportunity missed. Because if they just work for my money, I pay them more and they work for my money, and sooner or later there'll be another reason for a pay rise, there'll be another reason for a pay rise, and now we're into a challenge where it's not profitable. But I'm now relying on this technician because maybe they are good, maybe they are outstandingly efficient or profitable or whatever. And so it's never enough. And so I like the idea of having technicians not work for money, like pay them well without question, but don't have them work for your money. That's going down a level. They need to work for something other than money. Like, by all means, incentivize, by all means, pay well. That shouldn't be the reason that they're turning up for work, because that is playing at a really shallow level and it's playing a really dangerous game. Because someone will tap them on the shoulder and they go, hey, Anthony, how about you come to work for me for another, you know, $5 an hour or another, you know, $100 a week or whatever it is. And techs will move for that.
The Frictionless Workshop podcast is brought to you by Solutions Culture. For details on how to get in touch with Andrew, consult the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, particularly when you've got, you know, a cost of living crisis and regular differentiations in interest rates and all of those things that are happening all the time. If, as you say, the focus is on the money, then you take away the focus from the job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I go back to, and I think this is something that the automotive industry as a whole is starting to get back to, but has dropped the ball like quite badly, is that it should be about professionalism. Like, they should come to work because they're proud of their trade. They're proud of their reputation. They enjoy the challenge. They're looking forward to contributing. Asked a class full of technicians, I said, how many people's lives have you saved? You know, we had a variety of different people. Some are still in their apprenticeships. They were late third year, early fourth year, and other people have been in the trade for 10, 15 years. And I said, well, you know, how many people's lives have saved since you've been in there? And it was the Microsoft Blue Circle. You know, it was like, I've never even thought about this. This was something that I'd never even considered. And I said, well, you've just come up with a subjective number. How many cars have you worked on? How many cars have had problems? How many times have you, you know, found funky tires, brakes, suspension, you know, whatever it is, engine issues, whatever, you know, cars coming on tow trucks that otherwise weren't functional, that because you did the job properly, this person now drives a safe vehicle versus a dangerous vehicle. How many lives have you saved? And I go, this is why you want to be coming to work for me, because we save people's lives. We delight customers. Like, don't get me wrong, we'll pay you well to do that. And at the same time, the business needs to be profitable. There's a balance here. There's a sweet spot for both the tech and for the business. And so the idea of working for money, I think, is really bad. Interestingly enough, that the guys that have been in the trade for longer, like 12, 15 years, they were in tens of thousands of people that just subjectively they go, I would have to be tens of thousands. I calculate how many cars I've worked on, calculate how many have had serious issues and even semi-serious issues. It'd be tens of thousands of people. So if you think about, even if you didn't kill someone, that resulted in a collision or that resulted in a, you know, think of all the stress, all the money, all the, like, that's a very impressive number. And that was just one room full of people. So why aren't we working for that? Why isn't that on the list of things? You know, why isn't that part of my motivation as a technical professional? Opportunity to improve.
Yeah, it's a really interesting situation, isn't it? If you can then take the money off the table, the question then becomes, is that motivation actually there? You know, what is the underlying cause for them asking for more money? Because is it really about the money or is it about other things?
Right. And so the way you would find this out is you would test, right? Just like you would test, is the air conditioning really cold? Well, I would run a test. I'd use a thermometer. I'd use a test to see if the air conditioning was cold. Okay. So the customer in this case, our technician, says, you don't pay me enough money. Well, let's test that. And so let's go, if I gave you more hours and paid you at an overtime rate, would that be okay? Because that's going to give you more money, right? Sure, the government... Gee, the government are awful. I won't use the word just because I'm trying to use polite language. They're not getting a Christmas card from me anytime soon. They're just not. Yes, I think they have opportunities.
In the dangerous part, if we start talking politics, but I think everyone hears you. They don't make it.
Right.
And so they definitely don't make it.
Right. And so for the tech, the government sticks into their pocket for quite a significant sum and you start going, well, actually, is this worth it? And the flip side is if you want to go and do that equation, like, that's a whole nother frame to look through. So as a business, I look at the cost of labor. So I pay the tech, and then I pay the super, and then I pay my payroll tax. And so the cost to me for this technician's labor is really quite high versus what the technician's getting in their pocket. And so I have to charge out a cost rate to the customer. So the customer's paying for all of this. Because at the end of the day, if the customer can't afford it, well, what do? You walk, you know, take public transport. I don't know. What's the alternative? And so I have to charge out at my cost rate, but I'm paying my technician at the other rate. But I'm not making all of that money in the difference. The government's sticking their hand into the tech's pocket, into the customer's pocket, and into my pocket. And I'm very confident that there's a word that begins with B that would describe what that is and ends in arstidry. But, and I get the point of taxes, but like, how far's too far? So we start talking about the commercial elements here. This becomes a very difficult conversation. And so I've asked these questions for technicians. Okay, so you're not earning enough money. You don't feel you're being paid what you're worth. Got it. What if we pay you overtime? Oh, no, I don't want to sacrifice time. I don't want to be spending more of my time working on cars because I've got backyards to do, or I'd rather relax or hobbies or whatever I want to do. And so we end up in, well, is it actually about the money? Is that really, because it was about the money. If it was purely dollar, you'd take the overtime. I certainly know I did as a tech. There's overtime, sign me up. Like, can I do more overtime? Sure, I get handled by the tax department without question, but that's why the tax department exists, isn't it? To handle people. At the same time, I end up with more money, you know, and there's workarounds, there's ways and means, and we're not going to talk about that. There's formal and informal payments. There's all sorts of ways of doing this. But certainly what I see with the younger technicians is that it's, you know, we talk about lifestyle versus pay versus overtime, and they're three competing tensions. Yeah, it's about the money, but it's not just the money. It's more complex than just the surface level complaint that we receive. And so some of the other things that I've tested, I've gone, well, you're earning this much money, where's it going? And that's an interesting conversation. Okay, so you're single, or you know, you're in a partner with a mortgage and or kids. Where's the money going? And certainly for the younger guys that are maybe in relationships but not out of home yet, or shared accommodation or something like that. You know, how much do you spend on food a week? And like, it is eye-watering, the money that gets wasted. And coming from a part Scottish family, so one side of my family was part Scottish, and they're very in touch with their inner Scotsman, deep pockets, short arms, all of that. My inner Scotsman has a moment. It sort of goes pale and slumps against the wall and collapses. You're spending how much? And so I go back to the complaint. Okay, well, is it really about pay, or is there something else at play here? And I asked the question then of service management. If they're managing their finances badly, well, paying them more money isn't going to solve the problem, right? That's just a self-perpetuating loop. They get more money, fritter away on stuff. There's no planning. There's no responsibility. There's no acumen around finance. So we're just going to start another cycle, aren't we? And so I ask, is it worth going, well, how about, rather than me paying you more money, how about I pay for you to go and do a class on financial management? How would that sound? Because I can claim that on tax, right? I can call that workplace training, and you get to learn how to manage your money. And so now you're actually not spending your money up against a wall. You're actually got some sense and some logic and some reason around it. So I go back to the question, well, is it really just about the money? Because it could be, like you might be underpaying, but is it that? How do you know until you test?
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into technician pay reality. If you found this diagnostic approach to compensation issues valuable, you're going to love what's coming up next. In our next episode, we're shifting from dollars to dignity as we tackle the complaint that technicians don't get enough recognition. Andrew reveals why your best people feel invisible and shares groundbreaking research that shows exactly how much positive feedback transforms workplace culture. Plus, we'll explore why promoting your top technician might be the worst decision you've ever made. Don't miss the recognition revolution coming up soon, so don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This is the Frictionless Workshop podcast, produced by podcastdoneforyou.online. All details in the show notes.